Hello, and welcome to 25 Cents, a video game podcast. I am Chris.
And I'm Nick. Each episode, we'll be talking about the games we've tried, other games we keep going back to, and what we think might be great games to check out if you've got kids.
And you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, on the web, or at goodstuff.network. Hey, Nick. Welcome back to 25 Cents.
How are you? Hey, Chris. How's it going?
Good, good, good. It feels like we're recording on Tuesday instead of a Thursday, so everything's all up is down, left is right, and but the gaming goes on, as they say.
Yes.
Let's jump right in.
I think they do say that. I think we should say that if they don't say that.
That could be our tagline now. The gaming goes on. Let's jump right into Switch Corner. What have you been hearing and playing, or what news do you bring from Switch World?
Yeah, so not a lot to add on Switch Corner. I did install the demo of one of the games that we covered two episodes back on, I think, on the indie event, but haven't actually played it yet. Been rather busy with work, unfortunately, so my game time's been down a little bit. But I did see the trailer for Game Builder Garage, which caught my eye, and I think it's coming out in June 11th. And this is the kind of game programming light thing that I think my son would really, really love. You know, you're kind of doing some programming, but roughly with kind of flow charts, event flow, to make sprites and stuff. If you watch the trailer, we'll include the link in the show notes. Near the end, they show some example games. And I think there's a different tier from what a random kid at home will be making versus what a game professional can make with the toolkit they're providing. But it looks like it'd be a fun game to build some stuff with.
Did you ever try not Paper Mario, the Super Mario
Mario Maker?
Mario Maker, yeah. Did you ever try that at all?
I've never had it to play it at length. I actually played it at, I think, the Living Computers Museum here had it set up on a machine, or maybe it was over at Museum of Pop Culture, but one of them had a setup, so I played it for a few minutes, but I've never gotten into it. I know it's pretty popular, and you can share your levels, and definitely can see the appeal of creating pitfalls for your friends. I know we've talked similarly about Wonderbox on Apple Arcade. You know, having that kind of make a quick little puzzle for your friends to play.
Yeah, and that's what I think for me as a grown adult with business and work requirements. Nice coffee mug, by the way. You COVID. With those kind of requirements, it's like, do I want to go build more or work? Like, it feels almost like I have to work to create a world, and so I'd much rather dive into a like Mario game or whatever. But the Game Builder Garage and stuff definitely is like a. I feel like, especially in the handheld mode, even being able to do that, just like sitting on, you know, like on a road trip or whatever, or sitting at the table if you're doing some lunch things or whatever, and playing it that way. It looks like it could be fun for kids to try out. I always feel like the programmer types are going to, the ones you're going to go on to develop games or programmer types are going to find that and then move on fairly quickly from those things, where it's just kind of like a little taste for most other folks or kids or whatever to try it out and see what it's like.
Yeah. I mean, as far as my own, you know, game making, obviously the tools were a little different when I was I guess it's more like preteen, but you know, I did a few very trivial like HyperCard games way back, and then I did some game modding where you could like create scenarios for escape velocity and stuff. I think I've mentioned before, but there weren't really tools like this that you could get into without doing like your full, you know, game engine, or often there weren't even game engines. You were mostly, you know, going from scratch. But yeah, I think it looks like it's kind of in the similar vibe to what was it, like Little Big Planet, or what's that one where you can combine items to make other items and kind of solve puzzle levels?
Well, that's actually, there's one that, it's not Roblox. There's one my kids came home with now that's like some sort of like they build things in the website and they're trying to figure out the ingredients or the whatever to the recipe to build new things together. And they're talking about what they've built. And it's either, maybe it's Bloxburg. I don't know. That's a Roblox thing as well. I can't find it right now. My Googling isn't working, but, yeah, there's a bunch of like these kind of builder games, like obviously jumping off of Minecraft, even that that kids, at least my kids anyways, keep coming home with that they want to dive into, and trying to figure out which is the best way to manage all of the things across three kids' interests and what have you. But I like to limit it to like Apple Arcade, Switch, Xbox, as far as like the platform, because the web is kind of like wide open, but there is, like you said, way more possibilities on the web of what you can do in terms of the tooling and stuff. And just kind of balancing that with like the infinity box of YouTube that's also on the web.
Yeah.
Pulls them into. So.
Yeah. We've let my son play around a little bit with Scratch. He's also played around with the Swift Playgrounds, but that's much harder because it's,
is it? Yeah,
it's,
I was like gonna actual, ask about
you're basically learning, you know, basic Swift control structures. You're writing code. You're not just stringing together blocks and events, like some of the other teaching languages. But we did sign up for a virtual camp at the Science Center this summer. That's going to be, I think, Scratch based. So they'll build like some little story game in Scratch, probably on the web. So we'll have to see how that goes. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be a lot of fun once school's out in a few weeks.
And then especially when they tie it into, I don't know if that's exactly what this is, but I know we did some like where they tied it into robot controls, like real world mm-hmm. robot that you can control with your commands and things like that. And so it gets a lot of fun sort of seeing the real world application as well beyond gaming or virtual, I guess. So
I have an old a rather old Lego Mindstorm set over, I guess, like the version from about 15 years ago. And unfortunately, the sort of core computer block seems to have died. And it doesn't matter anyway, because the software, I would have to find like a Windows XP box to run it on, you know, because it's it hasn't been updated in many years.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of PCs, quickly, I still want a gaming PC, streaming PC, but prices are dumb. So moving on from that, you said something about cryptocurrency.
Yeah, everything. I mean, it's kind of not to get the relevant fans angry at us, but I mean, it seems like cryptocurrency mining is severely impacting, in addition to the environmental impact of some of the algorithms, severely impacting the supply of PC parts. I was just came across on my Twitter timeline this morning that so there's this newer one called Chia that uses proof of space, where I guess you're performing many writes to disk as part of the mining operation, as opposed to compute. There's a report that you can completely destroy an SSD in 6 weeks because you're doing so many frequent writes that the little transistors, each individual transistor can only be flipped so many times.
Yeah.
And the way a modern computer manages it is your SSD effectively slowly shrinks over time, and it tries to do a really good job of spreading the writes across it, so it's not overwhelming any particular region. We need the Syracuse file system bell in here in a moment, but it sounds like another entry in the why are we building this kind of technology.
If it was like dirty oil spilling over a tub as a truck drove down the highway or whatever, hauling the financial gains of cryptocurrency, we'd be like, this is awful, this is gross. But there's something about like just tossing an SSD drive in the bin and grabbing a new one doesn't feel quite so gross. Anyways, we can leave that to
another point. I think anyway, that might be part of why some of your parts are hard to find from what I hear.
Speaking of overpriced parts, Apple Corner. We talked last time about Apple TV hardware, which is still, we talked about ordering. We both ordered the 64 gig, I think, right? And so that's shipping end of the month, I think, is what they had said. So waiting on those parts to arrive and see how much our world and our lives improve dramatically, I'm sure. We were watching For All Mankind, and on the Xbox, the Apple TV app has some bugs in it for sure. Like occasionally it'll reset and you just kind of like have to restart the app and find your way back into the show if it happened to skip or not remember where you left off because it wasn't, official pause of the movie. So I'm hoping that Apple TV itself is better, although I know from experience that it is software on hardware and sometimes it has issues as well, despite being Apple. So that's something I'm looking forward to with that, and disconnecting the TV from being a smart TV too would be nice. But any games that you've been playing in Apple Arcade?
Yeah, I did try one of the recent Apple Arcade releases. So it's Simon's Cat Storytime. I know I've seen this animated character around the web before, but I'm not too familiar with it. So it's a branded property. It's basically Candy Crush. So, you know, you're clearing a board every level. There's, you know, things that can clear a line, things that can clear an area like a bomb. You can combine them. You can clear all of one color, you know, these sorts of things. And there's different blockers that you know, can appear on different levels that you have to clear first before you meet whatever the goal is. And it's got this kind of long story of this these neighbors working together to rehabilitate an old like park and public garden or something, seems to be the story. I'm on, I think, the fifth chapter out of 16. So, you know, I've gotten, I don't know, maybe a couple of hours of puzzle play spread over the last few weeks. And, you know, obviously there's going to be several more. It doesn't look like you can go back and repeat levels. You basically, once you clear a level, you get a star, which lets you unlock the next stage of the next cutscene in the story. But yeah, it's, you know, it's a good casual mobile puzzle game. There's nothing, you know, terribly revolutionary for it. The story's kind of interesting. There's little cute animated pets that everyone has. It must be a British property because the language is definitely British English. Mm. And the characters seem to be, you know, somewhere near London, maybe. I don't know.
How's your accent picking out geographic or England?
Well, there's not audio, but just the word choices, right?
Right. Yeah. Gotcha. I thought you were that talented at picking out.
No, accents. No, not a skill of mine.
yeah. Actually, we haven't. I'll on camera here. I can see. I got my Xbox controller that came in, which is lime. My daughter reminded me, not bright yellow for Lemon Productions, but it's a beautiful looking controller and sits really nicely on the desk. I actually haven't played a lot with it yet, in terms of using it with Apple Arcade, but this paired with the Apple TV when that comes is sort of the end game for that part of it, to try out some of the games on there. And I did a little bit of just quickly trying out with the Wonderbox actually. And the controls, once you have, I was worried that they wouldn't have mapped the controls to the Xbox controller very well, because they didn't seem to map the keyboard mouse controls super well. But the controller actually works really well with the game in game. It's like the buttons are mapped right. There's the start button, et cetera. All the things kind of work really well. And moving the camera around works as you'd expect with the second joystick. And so it actually was a really nice experience. So then I had synced it up to my phone, which works well enough. And then what I should do is hook it up to my laptop for now, my MacBook, to use it on the bigger screen. Obviously, it would be basically the same kind of experience as what hopefully the Apple TV would give with that. So it's a nice addition to definitely gaming. I didn't have a controller at all before with Apple Arcade. So now I'm kind of rethinking some of the old games that I've tried that might be worth going back and revisiting with a controller again.
Yeah, the Apple Arcade play in there is interesting. I think we've talked about this before, but that, you know, the developers have to support three very different input modes on four very different platforms. I mean, obviously, you know, your random, you know, most of your random Steam games are going to support keyboard and mouse as well as some kind of controller, right? But yeah, that's just going to be on a big, it's expected to be on a big screen. You know, a lot of these arcade games also have to have touch controls, which is a very different paradigm. That said, as we've reviewed a lot of the games on the show, you know, there've definitely been games where, you know, this is like certain games are clearly kind of touch native first, and some games maybe are more suited to the controller. It's interesting to see how the developers handle that. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to, I have an Xbox controller that I got for Apple Arcade, a year and a half ago. And I've used it a little bit with my Mac, but the family iPad, but have not really gotten to get into some of the games that I think would be best suited to that interface in the big screen, in the living room.
Yeah, there's something about sitting down. It's probably the ultimate peak North American, anyways, laziness of like being able to sit on a couch, controller in hand, bigger screen of some sort in front of you. And that's like, to me, equates video game. When I'm sitting at my desk here and like on my laptop or even at the kitchen table, let's say, or whatever, with the laptop or my phone on a, you know, held up, somehow that feels like sort of work-ish play.
Right.
Whereas downstairs, it's like a complete, I mean, this is a very first world problem, but like I walk down the stairs, sit on the couch, turn on TV. That feels like, okay, I'm now relaxing in video game land mode or whatever, or watching TV mode, I guess, most often. But and so that's sort of the experience I'm after. But at any rate, I mean, I sympathize with the developers having to try and figure out which, especially supporting Xbox, PlayStation. Yeah. For a little while, they had the Apple TV remote that was kind of sort of supported as a controller. And
right. The new model remote does not have the gyroscopic controls,
which is a smart, I think, thing just to say, like, no, this isn't going to work. Move on. I can't remember if that was a thing. At one point, it was a thing where you could use your phone as a controller itself. Like there was some sort of app controller thing, but maybe they gave that up as well. But
there is still the remote app that can control the Apple TV interface. I have not seen any reports as to whether you can use it to play games that way. And I would assume that since that's going over a Wi-Fi connection, somehow the latency may not be there for some games.
Yeah. And then in just random other things that is, I think, more heavily on the rumor side versus anything reality, although it's very possible they'd be working on this, is there's a rumor going around that Apple's developing a Nintendo Switch style console, that, you know, handheld thing, which feels like a fairly obvious thing to me that they would be at least trying and experimenting with, and maybe even ordering parts to do. And who knows, the idea that they'd be approaching bigger game publishers like Ubisoft, you know, and that kind of thing to develop for this platform feels a little far-fetched right now. Just, I mean, it's possible, obviously, that they would throw some money at them to say, hey, build us a game and see what you could do with it. But I don't know why. I mean, it feels a little bit like whatever they'd be at now with all their different areas they're focused on, but like a fifth or sixth level kind of thing, where Apple Arcade is very obviously casual-ish gaming, and to go all in on an actual gaming platform with hardware focused feels, especially when they haven't really been that pumped about the Apple TV, even as a gaming platform, feels a little like a bit of a stretch. But maybe this is why it's not, I guess, because they're thinking this. I don't know. I just include it for...
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could think of it as something that's more in the iPod Touch lane, where it's like you want a mobile-ish device that can drive a big screen sometimes, so dockable like a Switch, but you don't want it to be a full phone and app platform. So... And certainly they've got all the developer tools, you know, between Apple Arcade and all the platform stuff and all of the shift. I don't do Apple development, but all the shift towards Swift UI being, you know, everything's just sort of infinitely scalable to any kind of screen and interface arrangement, that they could be doing that. It does seem like something where someone managed to catch a glimpse of a prototype something. And, you know, I'm sure there's dozens of things like that that never make it out of the Apple lab.
Yeah.
I know some collectors go after the old Pippin, which was the Bandai Apple video game console collaboration in the mid 90s, back before the return of Steve and the simplification of the lines to save the company.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. That's where sometimes I look at, not to go too far down the Apple rabbit hole, but just the diversification of Apple, which happened obviously while he was there too, but just how many different areas Apple's got their fingers in these days, and whether he would be like, hey, remember Simple, but who knows? Money's obviously no problem.
Yeah. Right, the other thing too, from the game side and like courting those big developers, is like, I know I've read, Shahid Kamal, who used to work for Sony and was like a PlayStation developer person, like, or not a developer, but he worked with the developers to get them on the platform, is it seems like Apple does not have a very big or deep team doing that work. Like, obviously they're getting developers into Apple Arcade, but my sense from people who I follow who are much more into the video game industry, Apple is not doing the kinds of things they need to be doing to build those relationships. And it sounds kind of similar to some of the stuff that happened when Apple TV Plus was first launching, and there were these rumors around, like, they're not making the right kinds of deals with Hollywood. They're not talking like Hollywood people talk. They're coming in as a tech company and trying to just do their own thing, and that maybe didn't work for a year or two, and then they had to kind of align with the way the industry does things. So I wonder if that is something that would shift, you know, now as we're approaching a year and a half of Apple Arcade.
Yeah, with the numbers, they can say like this many users, et cetera. And so then it's worth developing. Even, I would imagine, even like for a game developer, just to have, just because the Apple's going to throw a ton of money at you, there's still like an artistic side of it where you want your game to be played by lots of people. And so if you know that, whatever, Wonderbox only has 10,000 users really versus your Switch that gets 2 million users, there's just a difference, even if it's got some money behind it or whatever that Apple can throw at them. So for that experience of developing for it, so... Who knows? We'll see. Moving on to Tabletop Corner. I'll just quickly say that Lost Cities actually just yesterday made a comeback. I finally have some games to report on. That's tabletop games. We've been very absent lately from the tabletop other than eating. and chess actually came back as well. And then badminton was the other, which is not tabletop in any way. But we picked up a cheaper badminton set at Costco that occupied the kids. And then, of course, as soon as we do that, it's been windy for like a week straight.
But yeah, finally, we've been getting the oddly cold May here as well, so I haven't had as much outside time yet.
Yeah. How about you? What have you guys been playing, if anything?
I'm blanking on the name of it, the city building game that I talked about last episode. We played a few more rounds of that. And then, you know, we always have kind of like Uno in the rotation and Sushi Go and some of the other light card games when we have a quick game to play. The latest thing I've added is actually in the RPG space. So I saw going on sale from some folks I've followed on Twitter for years who are, you know, interested, who make games. A new RPG rules and setting called Hardwired Island. So it's like a retro futuristic cyberpunk game. It's set on a O'Neill Cylinder space station at the Earth Moon L5 Lagrange point. They very explicitly say it's heavily inspired by a lot of 90s anime, you know, references to Akira and Cowboy Bebop and Ghost in the Shell and all these things. And it looks really interesting. And I know my son has kind of is aware of sort of the cyberpunk aesthetic, because like we have a couple of books that are or other things that are relevant in that area, and there's like it features heavily in music videos. So my son's been interested in sort of the cyberpunk aesthetic bits that he's been exposed to. I don't think he really understands the sort of true punk aspect of it, because I think a lot of what gets labeled cyberpunk is sort of, you know, neon techno city stuff, right? And that's present too in a lot of video games. But this source book, and I've been skimming the PDF, is much more explicitly the classic political take on cyberpunk. You know, that technology has sort of amplified the have and have not divides in society, and you know, what all does that mean? But yeah, it looks really cool what I've read so far. They have a lot of interesting rules around how you would manage your cybernetic implants and what kind of jobs you can do. One of the big elements is every character can work on like a gig app. They have some different made up gig apps that you know to do random jobs on the space station while in between adventures. So some interesting ideas. And then they commissioned a soundtrack to go with the game.
Oh, nice.
So it's available on Bandcamp. It's this guy, Neon Shutter. There's sort of a musical homage to the fiction style of the era. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about this one. I think probably what we'll do, since I don't really have a lot of full RPG gaming time to do like a campaign, is I'll probably run, you know, a little mini adventure as like an intro to, or another intro to playing these sorts of games and storytelling, and see what my son thinks of that. Cause I think he would enjoy the idea of like wandering around a space station and like, you know, fixing a robot on a quest kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's like where you DM the game, like that kind of game, or is it more like you both follow along?
Yeah, so it's not, there are some tabletop RPGs that are like pure just cooperative storytelling where there's no fixed game master. But yeah, so this one, you know, one person would have to be playing, you know, all of the other characters that you interact with and setting up the story, and the rest of the people would be playing their characters. Yeah.
Right. Nice.
Yeah, and it was one of those things too that I think it came out a couple weeks ago, and there's like this whole thing over whether $30 was too much for a PDF. And it's like, no, it's like 400 pages of really detailed game content. Like, yeah, that's easily $30 worth, right? Like,
yeah, I saw that 397 page PDF alone is just like, I mean, assuming it's filled with relevant content, which it sounds like it is, then like that alone is just, $30 is almost nothing for that, considering what you get, just because you don't get a printed out copy. Maybe that's where people are feeling like, I would pay $50 for a hardcover book, maybe, or whatever. But even then, I think they'd be a lot more than that if you got a hardcover version of something like this. So, it seems like.
Yeah, looking forward to playing some of that.
Cool. All right. Well, it feels like we're short this time. We have like ran through our list of conversation topics already, so, which is okay. We'll keep you guys, you listeners anyways, with more free time to go play games, I guess. Let us know what you're listening to, or listening or not. I mean, you're listening to this hopefully right now, I guess, but let us know what you're playing. You can tweet at us, 25C Arcade on Twitter, and let us know what you're playing. What games you think we should cover? Where can I find a cheap video card that's actually good? Those kinds of important questions are ones you can answer for us for future episodes. Anything else you want to cover before we go?
No, I think that's it. We've maybe we'll get more into games as I convalesce for my second shot this week.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I know everybody, I think up here in Canada, anyways, where a lot of us are still like first shot, and then the second shot is like months away, actually. But we keep hearing the reports of like, oh my goodness, the second shot was so whatever. And like, it's almost working against the idea of, like, I think people getting their first shot. There's kind of this idea like the vaccine is painful, or like, yeah, going to make you feel gross. And so, but luckily, at least here, yeah, anyways, where we are, there's pretty high uptake. So
definitely willing to take a day or two of feeling awful to not get the rest of it.
Exactly. That's totally what I think. But anyways, we won't go down that path too far.
Yeah, again, maybe stepping on a rake too much there.
Anyways, thank you for listening to 25 Cents, our video game podcast. You can find me on Twitter at iChris.
And you can find me on Twitter and most everywhere else as UltraNerd and URD.
And like I said, you can find 25 Cents wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to check out the Good Stuff Patreon, patreon.com/goodstuff. And I'll see you around. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.